Think big. Think positive. Never show any sign of weakness. Always go for the throat. Buy low, sell high. Fear, that's the other guy's problem. Nothing you have ever experienced can prepare you for the unbridled carnage you're about to witness. Right. Super Bowl, the World Series, they don't know what pressure is. In this building, it's either kill or be killed. Right. You make no friends in the pits and you take no prisoners.
No prisoners.
1 minute, you're up half a million in soybeans, and the next, boom, your kids don't go to college and they've repossessed your Bentley. Are you with me?
Take podcast. I'm your host, Craig Turner, author of the Turner's Take newsletter. I'm also a broker here at Daniels Trading. We work with traders in the futures and options markets, you know, for grains, energies, livestock, anything that's listed. Work with hedgers, speculators, online traders, broker assisted, managed funds. Hybrid is probably our most popular category, where it's a mix of broker assisted online trading. We have great apps for phones, for your computer, web-based. So if you have any questions about what we do here, you'd like to work with us, regardless of the service level or what you're trading, feel free to call me. All my contact information is on the show notes of this podcast. They're also on our website. If you go to turnerstake.com, that's where we have our, I have my spec kind of trading website, and also for our clients here, they'll get a Turner's Take market alert, which is the spec trades. And if you go to turnerstakeag.com, that's mostly for farmers and ranchers. It's going to be livestock and the grain markets, and that's Turner's Take Ag Marketing. All comes underneath the Turner's Take newsletter and podcast, which that part of it, the newsletter and podcast, is free for everyone. If you're a client, you get the Spec and the Hedge newsletters too. So let's get into it. I was actually out of the, now I was in the office, but I had to work from home for a couple of days. My wife is a real estate agent. She had to do some training in the city. So every once in a while, a couple times a year, I have to work from home. It's not my favorite thing in the world, but I don't know, you kind of get through it. I don't know how people do it. I prefer to come into the office and separate it. But anyways, that's neither here nor there. Big news of the week was China, U.S. negotiations are going well. And, you know, what it ended up turning into was, you know, China ended up buying and starting to buy some grain, specifically in this case soybeans from the United States. So let's just talk about a little bit about the China and U.S. story here. So China's in kind of a dilemma. Like, they need to get a deal done too, just like the President of the United States do. But on China's side, they have to do it in a way where they don't look weak, you know, making these concessions. I think, you know, a lot, you know, because it seems like China's more dependent upon the U.S. than the other way around. And I know for the farming and agriculture contingent out there, that may not seem, you know, as a fair statement, but in the overall economy, China has fared far worse than the United States has when you take in all the sectors. And also, I think within the Communist Party and China, they're a little bit more concerned with power and how they're viewed. So I think what's going to end up happening here is China's got to make this deal without making look weak. So I think we'll see what we saw when this deal was done. The administration, the U.S. administration, was very kind of boastful about getting things done. And we didn't hear something out of China until they got from Argentina back to China. And they've been kind of, you know, letting stuff out quietly about, you know, what was agreed upon. And I think that's what people just have to realize is that, you know, everyone here has to look like a winner. Everyone here has to save face. And I think that's, you know, and that's really what's telling that story. So I think just keep in mind, as we're going over these weeks and, you know, this 90-day period, there is going to be that part of it where one side may be boasting a little bit where they're winning, and the other one's kind of a little bit more quiet about it. Like China is buying not all their grains all at once, which wouldn't be smart to. They should be buying it in increments. They can use it as leverage if things don't work out, you know, kind of a little tit for tat, right? So that kind of makes sense. I know, and we'll get that. I'll get to that point in a second here. There have been some stories about China wanting to, I think, what was it? The foreign investment in China decreased by something over 20% in November. So, you know, between their stock market being down 30%, between foreign investment, just this is before the trade deal in the G20, just kind of really that is flying out of the country. That's got to be worrying to them. So it makes more and more sense that this deal is getting done. It makes more and more sense, I think, that the United States can boast a little bit, and China kind of has to, you know, be on their side, be a little bit more quiet as they announce these deals, because they are, I would say, they're not winning. I wouldn't say they're in the lead on this one. But they also, what came out is China's no longer requiring local governments to work on the Made in China 2025. So that may be what's interesting about that story is, you know, maybe China's also kind of lightening up or willing to work with the United States on its concerns about intellectual property and technology transfer. So these are the stories that have been coming out. If you haven't been seeing these stories, I would seriously look at the South China Morning Post. We have very good news outlets here, but I think being in the United States, you sometimes get one side or maybe a couple of different sides. But if you go to like the Hong Kong, big Hong Kong newspaper, like the South China Morning Post, you get sometimes even a better read or a different read that kind of piece these things together. I think the Hong Kong Trade Board also slashed export forecasts by half. Because of what they're looking at is what if this trade war continues? Again, building pressure on. So it's not just pressure going on here with our president and the United States, but there's definitely pressure going on in China. And that's, I think the two of those points is going to make these things work, which is why, at the end of the day, I think there is going to be something to get done. And this is, something have to go pretty wrong for this trade deal eventually not to get done. But what's interesting also, too, is the trade war originally was confined or affecting China's private businesses. It's now affecting the state-owned enterprises, which means that's where the party members are. And it's starting to hit their pockets and their power and their influence, too. So, again, it was all very interesting. So where do we go from here? I think we're starting to see... I think the S&P is going to start to stabilize here. We're down like 13 or 14% from top to bottom. The highs about 2950. We've had lows of 2600. I was saying, someone asked me for like a press release marketing thing that we do, like, pick, one idea that you'd like for 2019. And, one that's so difficult to be put on the spot like that. But I said, what I would do? I'd probably, as a little trade on the side, why not just buy the S&P, and hold it? Now, you got to have a lot of money and a lot of capital to do that. And it's definitely not a trade wreck or something. I'm not making a trade wreck on that or suggesting everyone should do that. But, when the stock market, what's interesting about the stock market is kind of a little bit of a long-only market. I mean, I think 15% of the stock market is short and 85% of the owners of stock in the cash market, the one that trades, in the stock exchange, is long, which is different than the futures. In the futures market, for every long, you have to have a short. So in the E-mini S&P, for every long E-mini S&P futures contract, there is a short E-mini S&P contract. It's not the same in the stock market. In the physical cash stock market, the one that we see on CNBC at the exchange, at any one time, usually 85% of that market is long stock and only 15% are shorted. So there is usually this natural money flow into the stock market. And also, it's usually held as an asset class for the most part, as opposed to the futures market, which is a hedging and a trading vehicle. So, I always find it interesting. And, the thing with buying the S&P is that, it's all about leverage. Like, if you're not leveraged at all, you can sit with it forever, right? Until the cows come home. So, again, not a trade wreck, but if someone, just based on this Chinese deal and how the economy's slowing, but we're not going into a recession. We're just not growing as fast. And who knows, with this trade deal, we may actually start seeing more growth than what we thought, which would be good for energies, grains, livestock, stocks, everything else, if we had a growth turnaround in the second half of 2019, which I wouldn't be surprised if that happened, if only these trade deals get done. So that's our S&P. Our crude oil look is, yes, the global economy has been slowing. The U.S. economy has been slowing. That's why we came down from $70 to $50. But now that OPEC is cut, and is cut bigger than we expected, I think crude trades in a range of $50 to $60. And there's a lot of different ways to trade that, the $50 to $60. Like, you know, you can be buying at support and selling resistance. Selling at resistance, buying back at support. You can sell straddles. You can in the middle of the range. You can sell call spreads and put spreads at the bottom of the range as we go back and forth. I think, or and you can also play the future spreads. I think we're going to be in a time period here of stabilization, because not that everything is going to be, you know, steady as she goes. I just think that the bearish forces and the bullish forces are really just going to cancel each other out. And it's going to be OPEC limiting supply as economic growth isn't as strong as it once was. And that's what's going to keep us in the 50 to 60 range. So that's how I'm going to trade it. And Turner's Take Market Alert, I've already started putting out ideas. I actually was talking about the June versus D spread. And if we get down to 50, I'm going to be looking at probably selling put spreads. If we get up to 60, I'll be selling call spreads. If we're in the middle of the range, probably be looking at short straddles and just and playing the market that way. Now, as we all know, you know, there's a famous saying there that, you know, my opinion changes as, you know, the fundamentals of the market change. I can't remember the exact quote. I think it was John Maynard Keynes. But, like, you know, which is an interesting point, but for the, you know, for the next couple of months here, I think that's where we are. And we'll continue with those strategies until one of two things. The economy either, one, tanks or goes, just starts filing on all cylinders, or OPEC makes a change. But I don't think anything that's going to happen. Those kind of things are going to happen in the next 2 months. So that's going to be our crude oil strategy. That's how we're going to trade it. If you want to trade with me, you're interested in that, feel free to contact me. You can do that online, broker-assisted, or hybrid. All right, we're going to go through the grain markets and our livestock markets. In terms of livestock, you know, we are thinking that livestock here is getting, especially the fats, are getting close to full value. I saw April was trading at 125 in the fat market. That seemed a little bit high to me, just given, I know the cash market's been a little bit stronger, but if you just take a look at just how much product is on there, maybe there is some kind of speculation going on here with the funds that there's a deal for beef between the China and the United States, and that would justify these prices, in my mind. But if we don't get that, then I can see us going lower. I have heard of some people who like the Feb-June cattle spread, and I kind of do like that too. So I'm kind of conflicted. Like, on one hand, I see the Aprils as overpriced, and on the other hand, I see some value in the Feb over the Junes. So I'm not too sure how to reconcile that at the moment. I think what's giving the mixed signals right now in the market is just maybe there is some expectation that the United States and China is going to get some beef done. And I don't know if that's warranted or not. If that's just purely speculation, there's something going on in the back. We're just going to have to keep an eye on it. In terms of hogs, I've been saying for a while we've been bearish on the front months because there's so much pork out there, but China has now announced they are going to buy pork. We all know, and we've been talking about how African swine flu has been an issue, and we've been liking that February versus April spread. Well, it got down to 6 again. We were getting in again. I only lived down there for a little while, but again, when Feb falls below April and 6, I like it. You know, as we rally into the 4s or maybe higher, you know, we've just been trading it that way. I do think at one point this thing, if African swine flu really hits China as hard as we may think, and they really come into the market in a big way after these tariffs and the trade deal is done, I would not be shocked if Feb versus April really does make a run towards par at some point. But for that to happen, you need that trade deal, and we also have to have a confirmation of how bad African swine flu is. In the meantime, I think with the spread market, that Feb versus April, I just like trading it. Someone asked me as we were getting out the other day, we were bull spread, and they're asking me as I get out the other day, hey, would you sell it? I'm like, no, I really don't want to short it, ride it back down, because ultimately my long-term view is it's bullish. I'd rather, but in between now and then, we can be up and down between -6 and -4. You know, 2 points is $800 per spread, and we can do that a couple of times. You know, you know, over the course of a couple of months as we wait for the big breakout, right? But I don't want to be is short that spread and then have the big breakout. And meanwhile, there's nothing worse than trying to, you know, get too cute by half, being short the thing, then when your thesis comes in, you're on the wrong side. It really is probably one of the worst experiences you can have as a trader. And, you know, we always talk about mindset and patience and psychology. Well, that's a big rule. That's part of it. So that's how we're going to handle the hog market. It's probably one of my favorite trades. With the grain markets, let's finish up with grains. You know, we talked a lot about China in the beginning and some of the other factors. I'm going to talk about soybeans first. So there's reports that China could buy 5 to 8 million metric tons of soybeans, and maybe have waivers for private companies for another 2 million metric tons. What does that mean? So China, who issues the tariffs, if they're buying it through their state Sinograin company, they don't have to pay tariffs, right? No one's going to tax themselves. The government doesn't tax themselves. So that 5 to 8 million, let's call it conservatively 5 million bushels, by the way. 5 million metric tons. So let's just go 5 times 39. It's almost 200 million metric tons, 200 million bushels, right? So if we have a carry out of 950, that only brings us to 750. If it's eight million metric tons, you know, now we're at about 320 million, let's call it 300 million bushels. Now we're going from 950 to 650. And let's say China does waivers for 2 million, you know, 2 million more for private companies to actually come in and buy. So 10 times, so that's about 400 million. So we go from 950 to, let's say, 550. So best case scenario with China coming into market, maybe they buy 400 million bushels, and they may not be an old crop. Like, they could split it up where, you know, 250 million of it is in the old crop and 150 million of it is in the new crop, right? And that's if they do it. But that's where the market's trying to gauge. You know, if we go to, let's say, a 600 million carry out, you know, soybeans in the front month being in the high eights to low nines kind of makes sense to me, right? I mean, you know, it's about a 15% stock to usage carryout. We're burdensome, not 900 million, billion bushel burdensome, but, you know, it's burdensome. It's not tight. You got to get to about in the 400s to start talking about 10% stock to usage levels. And, you know, and then if we get below that, then, you know, that's where $10 beans live. And then below that, that's how you get the rallies above 10 or into the 11s. So what is nice is that at least the math kind of gets you closer. I mean, the magic number for soybeans to be back in $10 is that 400 million range for ending stocks, which gets us in close to the 10% stock to usage. It's a lot easier to get there from 600 million to 400 million than it is from 950 million ending stocks to 400 million. I mean, you know, a couple of million acres or some shaving off the yield can help you with 200 million bushel dislocation. It's much harder for the 500 million. So I'd say that's positive. There was some negative reaction to China about only buying 1 million metric tons, and the market was kind of disappointed this morning and sold off by 10 cents. But also, if you're China, you're not going to buy it all up front in the beginning. I mean, there's a lot of negotiations going on right now. And it's not just about ag. It's, you know, ag is probably on the one of the minor things with these negotiations. I'm sure, you know, the $500 billion worth of goods and services is on China's mind that's getting tariffed by the United States. The United States probably, I hate to say it, probably cares more about intellectual property and transfer of technology and having China opening its doors to more of a more freer economy than, you know, soybeans. So China is probably saying, hey, you know, as they're bargaining, you know, it's probably a chip. You know, soybean and ag purchases are probably a negotiation tactic, being like, all right, we'll buy, you know, X amount of soybeans and whatever else it may come down to, and they're going to probably deal that in with bigger things going on. in those negotiations. If I were China, I'd only buy one or two million metric tons at a time, too. Because if something starts going wrong in a week or two, or there's something contentious, you could be like, hey, you know, we still haven't bought the rest of the 4 million metric tons, right? I mean, it's all about leverage and gamesmanship, I think, at this point. We don't see it behind closed doors, but, you know, I know there was some talk today in the cash market that they're expecting the United States another 1 million or 2 million metric tons to be announced by the USDA over the course of the next couple of business days. That'd be fantastic. There's been talks about China calling up a lot of these cash, you know, the cash dealers asking about corn, asking about wheat, asking about cotton. There's a rumor going around that they may even look into buying 5 million metric tons of corn. 5 million metric tons of corn, it's about a little under 200 million bushels of corn. If they bought that, our carryout goes from 1.8 to 1.6. You know, all of a sudden, instead of corn being in the, you know, front month corn being in the 3.6, 3.3, 70s, 3.80s, you know, you can make an argument for March corn being $4. You know, with July being 4.15 and December would be about 4.20, 4.25 in that kind of scenario, right? So that can happen. That can definitely happen. And then with the wheat market, you know, we have so much wheat here. If I were Trump, see, China doesn't have a huge need for wheat. They probably have a bigger need for pork and soybeans, right? But you know, they do use corn. And there's always been talk throughout the years, when will China be an importer of corn? And the wheat market, that's not really part of their, that's not as big a part of their diet as some of the other grains and foods. But, you know, I would think about it this way. Like, the United States does, let's call it $500 billion a year with China. You know, when China buys, let's just call it, you know, let's say China ends up buying 200 million bushels of wheat. 200 million bushels of wheat times, let's call it $5 a bushel. You know, that's $1 billion worth of wheat, right? You know, $1 billion worth of wheat to make everyone happy, and you have a trade deal where you're getting, basically, you're selling $500 billion worth of goods to the United States. Doesn't seem, you know, and again, if they're trading horses, it doesn't seem out of the picture. When all of a sudden just goes into the Chinese state reserves, or who knows, maybe they turn around and sell it later on the export market. I will say this, though, about, you know, China buying grain from the United States. If they do end up buying, in addition to, let's say, pork and soybeans, and they do buy corn and wheat and cotton, whatever it may be, however the steel goes down, world-ending stocks aren't going to change. So just keep that in mind. We are just really dislocating stocks from one end to the other, and what it really means is that, yeah, corn ending stocks will be the same worldwide. Soybean ending stocks will be the same worldwide. Wheat ending stocks will be the same worldwide. It's just that means that we won't have as much of it. And it will help prices locally in the United States or regionally, you know, in the United States. Absolutely. But it doesn't do anything for the world numbers. It just does things for the United States numbers, which it's important. There's no doubt about it. But you know, you got to take that with a grain of salt, too. So that's where we are. So going forward, I think from a marketing perspective and maybe even a tech perspective, you know, when we get to, let's say the United States has a 600 million carryout, you know, with all the Chinese sales, you know, front month should still be in the low nines. You know, new crop should be 950, 970. And a lot of that added premium is just a cost to carry. So I can see us keep on coming down. Or, I mean, I can understand, not keep on coming down, I should say, is I can understand farmers making some sales in here. I can see the point of taking a shot on the short side. You know, if we get into the $9 for the front month and we get, you know, $9.50 for November, for the first time in years, I can see the point of selling straddles and soybeans, which I haven't said in years, just because I think we're going to have a, you know, I think with these prices, maybe we have 85 million acres of soybeans. Maybe it's not 83, 82 like we thought it might be. Maybe we don't add as much to corn. Instead of 93, 94, maybe it's more like 92 million acres for corn. I can see it working out like that. Maybe wheat picks up a million acres and things start to stable a little bit. I can see more of a stabilization in the grain markets here, where beans are in the low to mid nines, where corn is around four and wheat is around, you know, five now for the old crop, but probably take a 50-cent dive for the new crop. Which, if I were a farmer, hard red wheat or winter wheat, and you know you're growing wheat next year, I think you got to start hedging. If you're not already, start hedging in the July contracts, because once we get through this tight period of wheat, there's going to be wheat. The world stocks will probably, I mean, unless you get crop failures again, and I know they're getting too wet in Argentina, and there's issues around the world, but usually wheat bounces back, and it's kind of rare to have 2 years of big problems, though that did happen in 2007, 2008, and that's why spring wheat went above 20. But again, unless something like that happens, it's probably a smart idea for, prudent idea for farmers to lock in something, you know, as the wheat market rallies here. And that is, I mean, so that is it. So on the, we'll be looking for corn. I still like straddles and playing the ranges. For soybeans, I'm starting to say we got to start to lock in some prices and risk. And you can even maybe take, as the market's rallying because of these Chinese purchases, I still want to just caution everyone. If it ends up being 8 million metric tons, which is a lot, you know, we're still only talking about 300 million bushels. So the carryout's still 650 with a lot of product being, with the great growing season gone in South America. So that would be my big concern for the farmer, and on the hedge, and then on the spec side, I would think you'd almost want to look into short. And that is how we're going to, and I think that's how we're going to do it. So I write Turner's Take. Between now and the next podcast and the weekly newsletter, that's what we'll be looking to do. More of trading that range in the crude, a little bit more bearish beans, a little bit more bullish wheat in the old crop, but bearish in the new crop, more range-bound in corn. Kind of taking a little bit more of a wait-and-see attitude with cattle, but I do think we're going to see some resistance here, and we do like the hog market. Here's something. If you are interested in getting into the grain industry, would you like to maybe be a junior broker here at Daniel's Trading? We are hiring on the hedge and farming side and also on the spec side. So if you know someone who's interested in this, maybe they're a recent college graduate, they've been in sales before, maybe they're already in the brokerage industry, and they're looking to do it, they contact me, contact Craig Turner. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me at turnerstake.com. All my information's in the show notes. You can definitely send this along to anyone. We're actually quite positive about 2019 here, and we'd like to talk to anyone who might want to be in this business, and I certainly would. So get that word out there. I appreciate everyone who listens to these podcasts. I truly do. It's if you like the podcast, tell your friends, tell your associates, go on to iTunes, give us a rating. That helps people find us here, and certainly. Certainly puts a spring in my step when I see people reviewing the podcast. And if you have any, you know, if you're starting your marketing, and you should be starting your marketing plans, I'm happy to help out. Give me a call. We'll talk about the hedging and income strategies we're going to look at here for the grain and the livestock. I've been a big proponent of actually selling feeders here for a while. We kind of got out our hedges recently, but when we were above 150, we definitely had puts on. We'd love to talk to you anytime, spec or hedge, online or broker assisted. So again, thank you everyone for listening. Please feel free to send this to anyone that you like, you think might like it. Turner's Take weekly newsletter is coming out today also, and it'll include this podcast. If you don't get Turner's Take weekly, come to turnerstake.com, sign up for the free newsletter. And it'll include the podcast newsletter when it comes out. All right, have a great day. And if I don't speak to you tomorrow, have a great weekend.
This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniel's Trading broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniel's Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors, such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation termination or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore, investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniel's Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniel's Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.